Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Deep Divers, June here, and I am riding solo just for this introduction. Jessica has had a remarkable conversation with Dr. Rebecca Brown, and you're about to hear it. And I just wanted to pop in here to say they are going to be talking about, I'll say it, vaginal health during menopause. And this is, again, the last week's episode was kind of a prequel to this week's episode. So sometimes we'll do a recap. Sometimes we'll do a precap. And last week's was the precap to this cap, this actual episode. So I'm so excited for you all to hear it. We're getting into it. You know, there's no other way around it. No way around it, but through it. So it's coming for so many of us, or you're already there dealing with vaginal health and menopause. But this is going to be a wonderful conversation. I can't wait for you all to listen. And I did want to let you all know that we have a few more tickets left for I'd Hit That, the Bitch Sesh Deep Dive Mother's Day Pickleball Extravaganza this Saturday, May 13th. There are a few tickets left. And just for our listeners, if you use code DEEPDIVE at checkout, you can get 15% off your tickets. The starting price is a $50 ticket, which gives you access to, oh gosh, all the fun. And it's just it's a wonderful time. You know, there's no other way to put it. And we've got some really fun tricks up our sleeve for this event. So again, that's code DEEPDIVE, all caps. Use it at checkout. Head to janeclub.com/pickleball. And I have to shout out the incredible sponsors who've made this event happen. The European Wax Center, SALT, the Jane Club, Avi at Avi Athletics. If you have not seen their clothes, they have the most beautiful elevated performance wear that really does function on and off the court. Skechers, Can, Lake Pajamas, Hampton Waters Rosé, and of course, The Dink. If you head to thedinkpickleball.com, I highly recommend signing up for their weekly newsletter or going to The Dink's Instagram to get up to date and pickleball fluent in no time. But I'm so excited about this weekend. I can't believe it's here. It's such a great opportunity also for you all to meet each other. The number of Deep Divers and Bitch Sesh listeners who used the last event on Galentine's Day as a meet and greet and became friends for life. It was just the most beautiful thing. Of course, there's going to be some fashion judging. Our dress code for this event is flirty chic. Zoe Deschanel and Anna Ortiz will be our judges, and they are not going to be holding back. So again, that's janeclub.com/pickleball, code deep dive. Hope to see you all there and enjoy this incredible conversation with Jessica St. Clair and Dr. Rebecca Brown.
Deep Divers, welcome. June is away, but I promise you this will more than make up for it. I have such an information bomb coming your way today. If you know me, you know that I talk freely about every single thing in my life, including my vagina. And I have with us today my own personal OBGYN, Dr. Rebecca Brown, who is responsible not only for pulling a nearly 10-pound baby out of my vagina, but also she was the first person I went to see the day I found my lump in my breast, and she saved my life, quite frankly, by so swiftly getting me care and sending me over to the Bedford Breast Center so that I had my double mastectomy within 2 weeks. That should be in the Guinness Book of World Records. But I could cry because she did. She pulled life out of me and then she saved my life. So she has done that for, I'm sure, countless other numbers of women. But what we are going to talk about today is vaginas, how to keep them healthy as we age. I know you guys are going to have a million questions for her. Who knows? Maybe we'll have her back live, but I want to get into it. I want to introduce her and I'm gonna let you know first how wonderfully celebrated she is. So I'm going to brag about her for a second. Dr. Rebecca Brown is a leading OBGYN working to help women in Beverly Hills, California, receive exceptional medical care. She specializes in the fields of general obstetrics, gynecology, infertility, menopause, and adolescent medicine. She received her medical degree from the University of Southern California, then moved on to an internship and residency at the world-renowned Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. Moving up the ranks, she was eventually made the executive chief resident of the hospital and received an award for her academics and research. Dr. Brown is known for providing excellent personal care, and her patient-centered treatment plans earned her the revered Patient's Choice Award 4 years in a row. Dr. Brown, welcome to the Deep Dive.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I don't think my own mother could have given me a nicer introduction, but I should have her listen so that in the future she could.
The best part about Dr. Brown's mother is she lives around the corner from me. Oh. And I recently saw her at our local taco joint and screamed across a fully crowded restaurant, "Dr. Brown, look, you pulled her out of here." And poor Bibi was like, "This is just another day with my mother."
That's funny, but I would just like to make sure everybody knows gynecologists don't only eat tacos and we go other places. And I'm sorry that your daughter was so embarrassed, but I loved running into you guys.
Do you have lots of people in public say things like that to you? I mean, you've delivered, how many babies have you delivered by now? Do you think?
You know, I recently stopped doing deliveries, but before that, it's several thousand. But they look very different now. They're hard to recognize.
Several thousand babies. Imagine that. And I have to tell you, I mean, watching Dr. Brown work. Now, I don't remember a whole lot of it, but my husband said, boy, was she just so in control. She showed up. She's like, you know, just so calm when you're pulling a baby that of that size out of somebody. That's not easy to do.
I mean, certainly the credit goes to you for that, but thank you.
No. It goes to you because we Irish people have gigantic heads. So Dr. Brown, I wanted to talk about menopause, and because I know now you've stopped delivering babies and you've kind of moved into taking care of women who are going through menopause. And I was struck by what you said the other day when I was in to see you, and you said, you know, I had a concern possibly I would have less patients, you know, when I stopped delivering. And instead, your business has even expanded even more because women are coming and saying, hey, this is happening to my vagina. Does it have to? What can we do about it? And the truth is we can do many things about it, but nobody knows about it. So tell me about that, what you've seen change in terms of how we're treating menopause.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I didn't realize that not everybody talks about vaginas and menopause as much as I do.
Nope.
And so there's probably less information out there than I realized. And while there are, you know, many options, you know, I sometimes wish there were more, but at least we can talk about which ones there are and kind of how people should kind of decide what's right for them. To start with, people mostly know what menopause is, but basically when the ovaries stop making estrogen, that could either be a natural process, a surgical process, or something from medication or other treatment received.
Right.
And it tends to affect the vagina, the vulva, and some of the urinary tract. Mm-hmm. And so the symptoms could be a bit wide ranging. The most common, of course, which would be dryness, pain with intercourse, burning, and also increased bladder infections. Those can all be attributed to lack of estrogen.
Okay. And yes, these are all really, some of the things are annoying and some of them are downright like devastating. When I went into menopause at 38, because immediately when you get breast cancer, or the type of breast cancer I have, you have to shut down all the estrogen in your body. And so that was a really shocking thing to go through. I didn't even know that there was anything that could be done. So when I started to experience those symptoms, I actually just thought, oh, well, this is my life now. And that was very, very sad to me. And I remember, I guess it was probably the second visit I had after I had gone through treatment, you brought up, you know, hey, are you having any of these symptoms? And I'm like, yeah, all of them. And you're like, oh, okay, well, there's actually some things we can do. And I was like, wait, what? So I think the first thing that we tried was the Mona Lisa, which you're going to explain what it is. But I laugh because we have an episode of The Deep Dive entitled The Mona Lisa Smile, because sometimes I like to give a little secret smile to people as a form of small talk, of nonverbal. And I call it the Mona Lisa, but it's also what you're doing to my vagina. So could you explain what that is?
Sure. And to be fair, you know, we don't usually jump right to laser for everybody. I don't want to make it sound like that's the most common treatment for, you know, in general, but especially for women who shouldn't or can't be exposed to estrogen, even topical vaginal estrogen. It's just another option for people to know about. One stumbling block for some people is it's not actually FDA approved for vaginal dryness.
Okay.
And I think that makes some people hesitant. It can be not cost effective. So that can also be like a stumbling block, but it's certainly great to know about for people who should not or can't take estrogen and maybe have tried some of the topical either lubricants or moisturizers and just not getting enough relief that way.
Right. And what does it do actually? Is it, it's a laser? I don't know. You've put it up there a couple times and I truly, and that's no one will be surprised to hear. During my labor, the doula had to take up a Google, a search of what was, I really don't even know where my uterus is, but she was like, this is where the baby is. Like I had done that little research. So what are you doing when you put that thing up me?
Well, thanks for the trust.
Yeah.
You know, the Mona Lisa laser is actually a CO2 fractionated laser. People might be using this laser on their face or for other skin that could be getting dry or thin. But it comes with a special attachment to be able to use it vaginally.
Ooh.
And it basically perforates tiny holes in a circumferential pattern to kind of stimulate underneath the mucosa to some of the fibrin and elastin molecules to actually try to correct the problem and make the skin have a little bit more give and a little bit more of its youth back.
Does it create collagen down there? Is it the same as your face? Because I know when you wound your face, you know, we had my dermatologist on, I was explaining that it kind of tricks your body into saying, oh, we need to repair this and create collagen where there wasn't. Is that,
you know,
I wonder.
It's a good question. I don't know if it specifically triggers collagen to kind of form new.
Right.
But when they've done some of the pathology studies where they actually biopsy tissue before and after the Mona Lisa, you can actually see the tissue is actually changing.
Wow. And the other thing is you think putting something like that up your hoo-ha and really going for it. Because I heard you say in our last visit to the nurse, you can take it up, you can crank it up to 3. And I was like, great. Okay. I think that's the highest. But it never hurts. And that's the other thing I think that people shy away from are procedures where they're like, it's going to hurt. I'm like, no. I mean, again, I probably have a pretty high pain tolerance, but you don't feel it. You get numbed beforehand and, you know, it doesn't hurt. It's really not that uncomfortable.
That's a great point. You know, as a reminder, most of our nerve endings are in the lower one third of the vagina.
Didn't know that.
Such that most people have pain with entry, or they feel when you put in the speculum or put in a tampon. But once the tampon is kind of up inside, you can wear it all day without really being too bothered. And so similar to the Mona Lisa, when we're doing laser inside, most people don't have too much discomfort, like you said. And we do kind of numb the topical skin on the outside, because obviously that does have nerve endings.
Right. And I will tell you from my own experience, it's worked, because I've now been in menopause for almost 8 years. And I don't want to brag, but the last time you looked under the hood, you were like, this is pretty good. You wouldn't expect that for somebody who's been in the kind of like estrogen deficiency I've had for the past 8 years. So I, at least the proof is in the pudding for me. And again, it is expensive, and that's a real bummer. You only have to do it, what do you think, once every year? I went a year and a half the last time.
Yeah, that's another good point. It, similar to other laser procedures, it does tend to wear off over time. So most people do 3 treatments 6 weeks apart and come back 1 year later for a touch-up, and about once a year after that if they continue to have symptoms.
Right. Okay. So that's something I've tried. I also tried the one, and I think this is before I consulted you about it, where it's like a hot a hot wand. What is that? Thermi something.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you might be talking about the Thermiva, which is, I believe, radio frequency.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different.
Different. And how does that one work?
You know, some people have gotten great results from it. But because it's radio frequency, it's heat, like you said, and it tends to tighten the tissue. I think of using it more for people who might have more like sagging in their bladder or kind of loss of strength to the tissue, to really kind of heat it and tighten it.
Okay.
Whereas I tend to think of Mona Lisa more for the dryness or kind of that lack of stretch.
Okay. That's really good to know. And I did do that, the Thermiva, and I didn't see much of a difference. So I think for my problem, definitely the Mona Lisa was the way to go. Now, the other thing that I am allowed to take is the estradiol. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little tiny pill that basically comes in this like tiny, tiny applicator. You pop it up there twice a week, and that delivers estrogen, but only doesn't ever get absorbed into the bloodstream, right? It's just it just gets to the skin. So I'm able to take it even though I'm not allowed to have estrogen in my body. And that's been a real game changer.
Yeah. You know, certainly if you have a history of breast cancer, we always have to consult with the oncologist before we're allowed to give you topical or just local estrogen.
Right.
Because while it doesn't absorb very much, a small amount does absorb, and
right,
you have to be a certain amount past your treatment or a certain amount stable for the oncologist to approve you. But it comes as a tablet, a cream, a ring. There is an oral pill that's less popular. Using the estrogen alone, the laser alone could be an option, but using both together seems to be even synergistic, where people have a slightly even better response than either alone.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, that was a real game changer. And that one was prescribed by my oncologist. So for sure, we go to them first for anything that would affect that. But for your regular layperson, that pill seems like a magic pill for me.
Yeah, and it gets right to the root of the problem, right? Because this is all caused by low estrogen or lack of estrogen, certainly adding back estrogen is a great first step for most people. And another thing to mention is, you know, a lot of people are hesitant, of course, and they wait to see if it gets bad, and then they wait to see if it gets worse. And when you're trying to resurrect skin that's so thin and so dry, there seems to be just a limit to how much we can bring it back. Whereas if you're a little more aggressive with starting it a little bit closer to your original menopause date, it just seems like people get a much better response, and you can always stop it later.
It's the same with your skin, because you have to have collagen to make collagen. It's like you can't. And I remember you saying that to me, like, let's jump on it now. And you know me, I'm very aggressive. I'm probably the most aggressive person that you'll ever come across medically, for sure. But That's really true. It's like, and I think the thing that keeps people from, well, kept me from talking about it is there's a lot of shame. But before we get into that, I want to front load this conversation with the other things they can ask for, because it's like, I want to, then we're going to talk about the emotions that go along with it. But so we've got this pill we pop up there. There's some creams you can use that are also estrogen type creams.
So the estradiol you mentioned is the bioidentical version, matches the estrogen that we would naturally have in our body. That's what most people use.
Okay.
And it comes in a cream. It comes as a tablet that you insert, and it comes as a ring, kind of like a NuvaRing, but
and it stays in there all the time. The ring
that you can just put in there and keep it in.
That's interesting.
It can be like uncomfortable if it's the wrong size for you, but
okay,
it's an option for people who don't want to remember to put in a cream or remember to put in a tablet. Another thing you have to kind of just be aware of is these estradiol products have the same product labeling as some of the systemic or oral or patch or, you know, systemic estrogens. And so I think when you read the product insert and it, you know, it talks about your risk of cancer, you know, it really might be something to discuss with your doctor on an individual basis, because using it locally
is different.
Topically, vaginally, has a much different absorption. And I think that also scares some people off.
Yes. Yes. Like when I go to pick it up at the pharmacy, they always say to me, oh, you know, this contradicts or whatever the word is with the, with the pill I take that eradicates any extra estrogen I would have in my body. And I'm always like, yeah, I get it, but I'm allowed to use it. So that, I mean, and I would have never thought that a pill would be something, an estrogen pill would be something I could, would be available to me. And I know lots of people are worried about hormone replacement, and that's a big other discussion of which I know nothing about since I couldn't do it. But this is a very different thing. So that's great to know that it is an option. Of course, we're going to talk to our doctor about it, but it is an option. Don't take it off the table.
Yeah, it's something to consider. And then if you really don't want to use estrogen, there are some people who use like a topical testosterone, also kind of off-label with some topical DHEA. That has not been proven inferior to the estrogen, but might have some other side effects. Like I said, there's an oral pill, doesn't have quite the widespread indication, but all possibilities for the right person.
Right. And then what was the one that I just ordered? What is that? The Revave or something. They all have the stupidest names.
Yes, you know, you're right.
The Reverie.
Somebody got paid for that.
they sure did. The Reverie is, what is that? Hyaluronic acid?
So for moving away from estrogen, and now there's just some topical over-the-counter or like online stuff you can buy, that'd be in the moisturizer category. Mm-hmm. And just like for the rest of your skin on the rest of your body, that's a hyaluronic acid. That you can just use, not necessarily during intercourse as a lubricant. This would just be like a daily or a couple times a week moisturizer that you could use.
And that comes in this like little pill. It looks like a pill, but it's like, so you pop it up there. It's tiny, you know, and then the warmth of your body basically melts it. And boy, oh boy, I was like, okay, like it gave me back my 16-year-old vagina. It was actually quite shocking. And you put it in at night, and it's expensive, which is really a bummer. It's really a bummer. So I was like, wow, this is actually so expensive that I'm going to have to like space out when I use it. The estradiol is covered by insurance, so I can kind of like alternate, you know, but I do feel so much relief that I can do something about this problem. I cannot tell. I mean, after I left your office, I sobbed in my car. You're like, love to hear it. Don't put
it's
that
a
on
common
Yelp.
Reaction. I don't know.
Put that on Yelp. But I did, because I'm like, you know, it can feel, first of all, you know, cancer is a totally different story. But for any woman to go through this change can feel very sad, because we're just so used to as a woman having our periods. I mean, I'm jealous of women who have their periods. That's so insane. You know, but when when June says she has her period, I'm like, oh, like wistfully looking at her. She's like, what do you mean? I've just been a bitch to my entire family and I feel like I'm losing my mind. I'm like, oh, I'm jealous. But I think like it is a way that we identify as being a woman, feminine, you know, youthful, fertile, all of these things. And when it starts to go away, it can feel very scary. So to know that there are ways that just we can keep our physical body intact is really quite life-changing.
Yeah. And these medications that are topical, certainly you can't use them. The estrogen, it's indicated just two times per week.
Right.
But you could use it less. And you could sub in the moisturizer, like you said,
yes.
You can kind of play around with it. So it can be quite versatile and you can kind of, if you find something that works for you, make up your own routine as long as it's within the rule set. And I think that's, yeah, a great point.
That's right. And then the other thing you recommended was a physical therapist. A pelvic floor therapist. Is that what you call it? I mean, again, went to this
woman. Sounds like something I would say, yeah.
Yeah, went to this woman and I was like, get up in there. She's like, okay, we're going to start small. I was like, nope, you don't have to. And she's like, oh, I'd like to. Like, I don't want to cook. But that was a mind blower for me. So what does a pelvic floor therapist do?
Ah, sure. So in addition, you could imagine that if you're having pain, especially with intercourse or vaginal pain, well, now the muscles might be a little clenched or tight. And especially if you're, you know, a big runner, you do a lot of Pilates, you've been in menopause for years, you're not being super sexually active, like the tighter these muscles become, now the smaller the vaginal opening appears. And muscles don't just tend to relax on their own. As with, again, every other muscle in your body, you really have to stretch after a workout or to relax the muscles. And so pelvic floor physical therapist should hopefully be able to provide you some tips on stretching or moves you can do to kind of help those muscles relax, and just one additional step.
And some of the people coming have the opposite problem where they need to build up the pelvic floor muscle, right? So they're doing exercises to strengthen it. It's so crazy that you can work. And it's really, a lot of it is with breath, which I thought was really interesting. Like it's all about breathing and having your muscles work with your breath to relax and to tighten. And in doing those, because you really have to contact your core, which for some of us has, you know, God knows the last time I contacted my core. But no, it was fascinating to me, you know, that you can go to the gym for your internal muscles there. And that you have to if you want to keep them healthy.
Yeah. And everybody's going to have a different response to all of these. It's not going to be rainbows and unicorns for everybody. But like you said, if you can start small and layer and make your own way. Yeah, absolutely. That's one more tool. Some women also use graded dilators. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if we had spoken about that. But
yes.
They sell on Amazon, even dilators where they start small and get sequentially bigger, just to kind of over time help get comfortable with stretching the skin as you're doing these other things.
And what was the name of, it's like another weird name, like Intimate Rose or something like that. But I do even remember a woman that I met at a breast cancer conference that I was speaking at. There was a woman there who was a couple years out, and she said, you know, I pop one in there while I'm doing my hair and makeup and keep it in there for an hour. Like, you know, while she's like blow drying her hair. Intimate Rose, Cody just said. I knew it was something fucking weird like that. Intimate Rose. These are also porn. I feel like names of various porn stars. But she was like, yeah, so like I'll pop one in there and just do my hair so that I know that, okay, well, this is my routine, because I will find that I'll order all these things and then I won't use them because it's for me, it was hard to confront like that, that I had to work on it. And so I would push it away. So
sure.
Yeah. So it's something just a little tip. If you could work it into a little bit of your routine, you know, pop it up there while you're putting your eye makeup on or whatever, you know, that that's helpful. Or like at the end of the night when you're flipping through your People magazine or whatever, just pop it up there. But that's sure. That's another way. I'm sure too that the muscles learn to, like, you know, strengthen, you know, or relax, whichever you might need.
And I've even had some people bring in their various dilators or tools or whatever, just to be sure, like, is this size okay? I'm not going to hurt myself. The chance of hurting yourself would be very low from my point of view. But again, I'm a gynecologist. So, you know, if somebody wants to just be sure, that's also an option.
That's really nice. And also, like, they're so tiny. The like starter is like the size of a number two pencil. So like you're going to have, there's something for everyone in that mix. I feel like the thing that was a barrier for me, and I am the most open person, but I think that there's a lot of shame that goes into the fact that something's not working. And so I don't know if you find this, but it was hard for me even to tell you, like, it's not going great down there. And I wonder if that's part of the barrier to people talking about it and bringing it up. You also only see your OBGYN once a year. And it's like, if you don't bring it up then, it, you know, what are you left with? Your Google, which is going to send you down, I mean, 100 different roads. Some of them are going to be a complete waste of your money.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you really do have to probably advocate for yourself in that way. I don't want to create a problem where there's not one. So I might not be asking everybody those questions if to me the tissue looks normal, or if the patient hasn't brought it up. So, and not everybody is comfortable to talk about it, even if we do bring it up.
Right.
Not everybody is interested in maintaining their sexual activity or don't realize that maybe it's related to their bladder. So I as well. So I think, yeah, certainly remembering to bring it up if it's a problem is helpful.
Right. And also to know that anything out of the ordinary, like any, and that's actually a really good thing about staying alive. Anything that is out of the ordinary or that you didn't feel when you were younger is something to bring up. Because
yeah, sure.
I do think there's a lot of like acceptance that it doesn't need to be there of like, well, I guess this is just, and I said it to you, I guess I thought it was just like, this is what happens. Your vagina falls apart. And it turns out that's not true. It doesn't have to be that way. But I feel like anything out of the ordinary, and that goes for your breasts as well. I mean, I don't know why I felt my breasts that morning when I felt that lump, because I sure as hell wasn't doing my monthly checks. I mean, how, it's like when people tell you to floss, you're like, yeah, right. I'm never going to do that. It is really important. I caught it before 40 because I was just randomly feeling my boobs. And it's not enough to rely on just your OBGYN doing it once a year.
I think people, and probably I'm biased, but women specifically are really good at like putting up with what they get used to. So, you know, getting used to super heavy periods and passing clots to the point of being anemic and missing their day's activity to vaginal dryness to the point that, right, they can't be sexually active with their partner. Yeah, the more you wait, the more you kind of get used to it. You're right. And then people just deal with it.
Yeah, they deal with it when they don't have to. Talk to me about the bladder, because that's not something I've experienced, but what can happen with your bladder with menopause?
You know, because the bladder is basically the roof of the vagina, you could imagine that as the skin becomes more dry and thin, same thing is happening near and around the bladder. So people tend to have more UTIs in menopause, more bladder infections, more vaginal infections as well. And sometimes for recurrent bladder infections, we actually recommend also going on an estradiol vaginal cream to try to help.
That's interesting. So when you're talking about, now again, I'd have to Google it. bladder sits on top of the vagina.
Just going to need you to trust me on this.
The wall. So, but it's not the wall of the bladder that's getting thinner, right?
You know, the bladder tissue, I'd probably have to check with the urologist if like the actual bladder itself is also changing, but you know, it's just made out of muscle tissue. So yeah, I'm sure it changes over time too. It can become more stiff-walled. But really, as the vaginal flora changes, now there's just like different bacteria and people seem to be just more susceptible in general.
Okay. Yeast infections too, do you get more of sometimes with menopause?
Statistically. Some people do. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk just about when you have a UTI or a yeast infection, what are we doing? Are we going to CVS or are we going to you?
You could probably do either. You know, up to a third of bladder infections, if they're mild, will often heal on their own if you're taking cranberry and staying hydrated. Mm-hmm. And yeast infections are usually more annoying than dangerous. Okay. And so if you wanted to wait it out or try something topical from CVS. But again, like you said before, if something's not normal, especially if it does not go away or gets worse, then I think you really should swing by your doctor's office.
And see them. When you're talking about cranberry pills, is it like the pills that you swallow to get, I mean, unless you, I remember yeah. back in the day, your mom would like force you to drink an entire thing of Ocean Spray and you felt like you were going to throw up. But now yeah, you
can take
Ocean
Spray is mostly sugar. I wouldn't do that.
No, don't do that. So you're
but the original gross tart cranberry
is disgusting.
Juice. Yeah. Or it comes in pills.
And it's the same effectiveness.
Should be, yeah. It can help. You know, okay. It's not as strong as an antibiotic, but it has some antibacterial properties.
Do some people take that like preventatively? Like if you're
sure.
somebody who in menopause or you're starting to get more UTIs, would you suggest maybe they take a cranberry pill? It's not going to hurt you.
Yeah, no harm to try that. That's a great idea. Some people use probiotics, which I don't know if I'm a big believer or not, but okay. they certainly make rather than eating a probiotic, letting it dissolve in your stomach and hoping some makes it out the other end to walk over to the vagina. They also make some vaginal probiotics that people sometimes have good relief with for kind of recurrent vaginal or UTIs.
You can get those over the counter or is that
yeah.
something you get a prescription for?
No, over the counter or probably Amazon.
See, how would I know that there was a vaginal? Like, that's crazy to me, but it makes perfect sense. And then how important is hydration? Like actually drinking water to your vagina. Does it get down there?
I mean, hydration is just good for you in general.
Right.
And it does help your skin stay hydrated. So yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Being dehydrated will not help. Same also, that reminds me, thank you. If you're somebody who's, you know, taking antihistamines frequently, Benadryl, Claritin, you kind of can dry up your mucous membranes, including your vagina. So a lot of people can have dryness while they're taking an antihistamine and that could be an impact.
If this was a problem with people's penises, you know, we would have like NASA would be like, like who cares about the moon? Like, let's focus all of our money on these penis problems. I'm telling you, I know it. I know for a fact. Okay. Now, tell me, and I know people don't like to hear this either, but this is also why we get in trouble as women. What are some bad things that I could be having happen to me that would mean I would have something scary going on? So cervical cancer, all of that. How do we protect ourselves? I know with breasts, we do need to do our breast check once
yeah,
a month.
Absolutely.
And it, hang one of those lame, you know, those gross like diagrams, they should be passing those out in your office, Dr. Brown, get on that, where you just hang it over your shower.
Noted,
okay? Because I feel like that's really important. People aren't doing it. But yeah, there's a lot of women. I'm sure you have seen more than your fair share of women before 40 having breast cancer. Is that correct? Finding it?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, I don't know why so many people don't do their breast checks, but every day people tell me they don't. And I think it's a combination of the fact that they think they don't know what they're feeling for, or it's all just kind of feels lumpy, or they don't have special training. But you didn't have special training and you felt it. And that's kind of the thing. The time I felt my first breast cancer, I had never felt one before. But when you feel something and it's different and you just get that feeling like, oh my God, I need to check this out. You need to check it out.
Yeah. And like for me, that morning I felt it. It did feel different, but I know for me, I had also been breastfeeding for almost a year and a half. And so your breasts are not your own. And that's a lot of the women who were with me in treatment that it had been growing while they were breastfeeding. And so even when you're breastfeeding, you need to be checking it out. And if there is any, and I know we have lumps and bumps while we're breastfeeding, but it's like, you can't bother your OBGYN enough when it comes to lumps. And you are the first line of defense, right? Is that what, I don't know why I called you first as opposed to a physician, but I was like, oh, I'm going to call Dr. Brown. And you saw me. And if your doctor is not willing to do this, then you get another doctor. This is why I send everybody to Dr. Brown. And she's like, I can't take any more patients. So please stop sending me people. But I called your office at 9 a.m. when it opened and you saw me at 1 p.m. And I then saw a surgical oncologist at 3 p.m. that day. Yeah. And when I saw my surgical oncologist, she said, Jessica, had you waited another 2 weeks, we could have been in a very different situation. So you need to be able to hear back. The amount of stories I hear where people are like, well, I called my doctor and I didn't hear back for another week. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not okay. And that's another thing that we accept as just people. Like, oh, it's okay. I don't hear back from my doctor. No, all doctors and doctors' offices are not created equal. So, but if you do feel a lump or anything weird, do you call your OBGYN?
I'm certainly a good first choice. If they're not available, you could also see your general physician. I can't always promise to see people in 4 hours, but usually we can also phone triage. Like if this is a lump you feel and you can't get in, we can often send you straight to get some imaging. But you're right. It's not something you want to have a delay about if possible.
No. So the other thing we're talking about is the old cervix. Now, I haven't had any problem with that, but what other things could be going on down there that we would want to get checked out?
I think I'm also a little biased in that regard because there's a new push that maybe you don't need to do your pap smear every year, or maybe you don't need to be seen as often after menopause. But again, my bias is, I don't know, I just don't agree.
More is more.
Certainly a red flag, it would always be bleeding. Like if you are, especially if you're menopausal, even small amounts of spotting or bleeding, I think should be taken seriously.
Okay.
But even if you're premenopausal, irregular bleeding that doesn't resolve usually warrants a phone call or a visit.
Okay, so if it's like in between your period and you're getting spotting or something like that, even if it's a tiny amount, you want to be just going in and getting it.
And not just one day, one time, but things that are then a pattern. If you start having spotting or bleeding between your periods for more than 2 months in a row, absolutely, I would get that checked out.
Okay. The pap smear is checking for cervical cancer, is that right?
Sorry. Back to your question. Yes, pap smear looks for cervical cancer. Yeah, and everybody's different. Some people are, you know, might be having the same partner for 30 years. Some people might have a new partner every week. Some people got their HPV vaccine. Some people didn't. Some people have had abnormal paps or not. So I think to assume that everybody's in the same category is wrong. And so, I think it's worth keeping an eye out. But certainly pap smears are the best way that we know to screen for cervical cancer.
Yeah. And I feel like, too, one of the reasons why it gets away from us, the regular OBGYN visit, is because when you're on the pill, let's say, and you're like, oh, got to get that prescription renewed.
Yeah.
In my 20s, God knows I didn't miss a visit. And then I had BB and it was like a year and a half, I think. And that was bad because possibly you would have felt it before then. And I have a lot of regret about that. But I also am like, no, I was a working new mother and I wasn't on the pill and I didn't need that prescription. And so it was like that. I feel like we need to find a way. And of course, I have ADHD, so I'm like, I'm now all about systems. But it's like it's one of those things, like if you're scheduling your highlights like 2 months out when you're getting your highlights done, we need to be making that appointment. So that's what I do. When I go into your office or any doctor's office, I say, okay, give me a year from now. Because if I don't do it and it doesn't pop up on my phone, I'm going to forget. And God knows with the pandemic, we've lost all sense of time and space.
Yeah.
And the difference of 6 months for your visit could be the difference between life or death. Truly.
For most people, it's probably fine. But especially in a case like yours, you know, that was really important.
Yeah, it is really important. So I'm really aggressive when I talk to my friends about this stuff. But I especially talk to the new moms out there listening, because the first thing that will go out the window is your care, because everything's about the baby, right? And then and there's lots of things that can happen to you during that time. Your hormones are going crazy. And so, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people are having, you know, hormonal changes that are causing problems that they don't feel like they even have a minute to go see the doctor about.
Yeah. It's so funny you say that. I agree. After a delivery, seeing patients back a year later, they almost are always late because they don't really need to come in for their year check. They're so busy taking in their baby for their 1 year check.
That's right.
And maybe their breasts have changed or their periods are off or they might need new birth control. So yeah, you're right. That's a common visit to kind of skip over.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. God, there's so much to talk about, Dr. Brown. I feel like you are really somebody who's a wealth of knowledge for people. And I want everyone to have somebody as good as you. Tell me what questions and what am I looking for when I am interviewing an OBGYN? Because I think the OBGYN you have when you're 25 and you just need a prescription for the pill is very different than the one you need when you are going to have a baby and then or going into menopause. Like, what am I looking for in a good OBGYN?
Oh, man. I mean, everybody has different needs, and thank goodness that there's somebody out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always like to start by looking at their pedigree. That's easy. You can easily Google where somebody got their training and make sure, you know, that they're affiliated with a hospital that you trust, because, you know, the hospitals are quite good at regulating their doctors and making sure we're up to date on all of our credentialing and CME, et cetera. So I think a good first choice is, like, are they at a good hospital that you know, like, and trust? And then beyond that, I think back to some of the emotional stuff you mentioned, I think it's nice if you feel like you can talk to that person.
Yeah.
Listen, doctors are busy. It's not one size fits all, but I think if you feel like there's a way you can contact them, whether it's by email or phone or through their nurse, et cetera, and that when you get there, you feel comfortable to say what you went to say, I think you'll make some good starts there.
Well, your instincts too. I mean, it's all about, like, even what Oprah says about, you know, the gift of fear. It's like we as women have really strong instincts, and the more we listen to them, the better. It can protect your life. It can lead you to the right or if you ignore your instincts, the wrong doctor. So if you and I left my OBGYN to come to you because it didn't feel right to me. And I'm so glad I did. And, you know, of course, the amount of research I did was Lennon was with you. Lennon was with not you, but the midwife that you had at your practice. And I also loved the fact you had a midwife at your practice, because I'm like, oh, that says a lot. Everything about a doctor's office should feel good to you. The way you are greeted by the receptionist, the way the appointment is made, what it looks like behind the desk should be organized and clean. Everything should feel right.
Uh-oh.
And if one thing, no, it is. It's very clean and organized you run a tight ship. But I mean it. Like, we need to be really aggressive about the quality of care we have, because we are consumers as patients. And I think sometimes people don't know that, you know? Yeah. If you live in a smaller town, it's harder.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Dr. Brown, I thank you so much. You will forever be a special human being in my life. You're an angel. I do believe we were brought together by the other side. Okay. I know you're a woman of science.
Oh my God. You're so nice.
But I really believe that, and you're an example to everybody, and I don't want anyone to settle for anyone less than Dr. Becky Brown, because she is something else, guys. She's something else.
Oh, you're amazing. Thank you so much for saying that, and thanks for having this conversation with me.
Love you.
Oh, love you too.
Let's go on the deep dive. Let's go dive in deep. Let's go on a deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go on.
The Deep Dive is produced by Earwolf, Jessica St. Clair, and June Diane Raphael. Our producer is Anna Cecilia, and our executive producer is Cody Fisher. Our sound engineer is Veronica Simonetti.
You can listen to our full archive of episodes on Stitcher Premium. For a free one-month trial, use code DEEPDIVE. Special thanks to Anne Geddes for our cover art and Lennon Parham for her sweet vocals. And remember, the best way to support The Deep Dive is to rate and review.